Welcome to 24 Hours of Radio Art. My name is Alex DeBoer, and this is CITR 101.9 FM. The piece you're about to hear will be best appreciated with headphones. The title is Get the Tape. Here is Chapter 1.
It can be glass, it can be plastic, it can be wood. People make it out of many things. It can be numbers and letters on a table. In the classical version of it, it's just a compressed piece of plywood with numbers and letters, yes and no, and goodbye at the bottom. Some type of plastic planchette or something that people can put their fingers on, and they ask questions, and hopefully it'll answer by going from yes to no, or letter by letter by letter, or number by number, to spell out a date, time, a letter, a name, etc., etc., stuff like that. Yes, I used a Ouija board. I mean, honestly, nowadays somebody will tell me, "Ooh, that was bad," and I'll say, "No, it was a piece of wood with a plastic planchette." It wasn't the board that was the problem, it's what I tried to do with it that was the problem. I could operate the board personally by myself. Nobody else had to be with me. One-handed. I asked a lot of questions about my life in general, where I was going to go, if I was going to meet somebody, what was going to happen, was I going to get what I needed the next day. Something came through the board that went by the name of Zoe. Yes, I remember the name rather vividly. Whatever Zoe was, it was agreeing with things, prompting yeses and noes to my questions that I guess I was kind of following with, which got me deeper and deeper into other problems that I had already gotten myself into. At the time, people tell me, "Well, what was the problem?" And I said, "Probably the amount of things that I was taking and doing and using at the time." When I cleaned up, I went into my first recovery house. I still had the board. Somebody said, "You have to get rid of the board." I said, "Okay." So I basically broke it up and I threw it out. And the night that I did, actually the afternoon, I had a nap. I had a dream. Now, in that dream, everybody has a typical interpretation of what they see as far as the gentleman down in the below goes, okay? Whether it's the horn thing or anything else, everybody has their own interpretation. Now, again, it was a dream. He appeared very upset, very angry, basically melted away, and I was replaced by the flame of a candle. It was a really unique experience for me because when I woke up from it, I remembered it. I was a little bit panicked. I told the gentleman about it. He says, "Go for a walk." So I went for the walk, and when I was walking through an area of forest not far from the house, everything looked exceedingly vivid. But there was the trees, the bark, the leaves, the sounds. Everything was way beyond what it should have been. I can't explain it, except for some people have looked at me since, heard the story, and said, "Well, you had a spiritual awakening." Yeah, okay. I didn't really understand that at the time, but it was just having that experience, having that vividness. This was a point where I reached where something, I knew something was there that was a little bit slicker than me. It was something that kind of drove me to stay clean and sober and move on with my life. My name is Daryl Pearson. I'm the founder of Northern Paranormal Investigations. We're a paranormal investigation group that investigates, evaluates, and hopefully explains reported occurrences of paranormal activity. I don't picture it as a religion. I picture it, it's a belief to a point. I used to be a welder fabricator. I guess I still am. I actually work in a welding office now. That's what I do 10 hours a day, 4 days a week. So that allows me to get 3 days off, which allows me to do everything else I have to do paranormal-wise and family-wise and everything else. MPI was officially founded, I do believe, officially, I do believe, the beginning of 2010, so the end of 2009, 2010. We are 100% nonprofit. Nobody within the group gets paid any monies in any way, shape, or form, never. And it would be very bad for anybody to ask any person experiencing paranormal events in their house and that is scared to ask them for money for their fears. I guess my first thought, way back when I first started out, was I really don't know what to expect, but I know there's something else out there. Hi, you wouldn't believe this, but okay, can you please tell us more about what you're experiencing? I went to my first investigation. I was sitting on a love seat. A guy had like one of those point laser temperature things. And I said, it's getting cold beside me. And when he pointed the laser at the seat sitting beside me, the temperature dropped 15 degrees C within about 35, maybe 40 seconds. Just don't. And I could put my hand in what appeared to be the cold shape of a person sitting right beside me, but there was nobody there. I asked them to move. The temperature went back up. And I kind of went, wow, that's really cool. I want to find out. And it becomes a little bit exciting because you're catching something that shouldn't exist.
Disembodied voice.
By all known laws of science, it shouldn't exist. So what is it? I think the alternative for me would have been just to live a basic life and move on, but I don't know where I would have been without it. It is taxing, believe you me. I mean, I have come to a point at certain times where I've been depressed, and I felt like I just wanted to give it up and walk away from it. Maybe my goal was to help people from a certain point of view that, other people can't. But at the same time, there's an excitement about it, and it keeps drawing you back and drawing you back and drawing you back and back and back.
You're listening to 24 Hours of Radio Art on CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Alex DeBoer, and I'm your host for the next 20 minutes. In this special presentation, I'm telling a story about a story. You just heard Chapter 1, the tale of Daryl Pearson, the founder of Northern Paranormal Investigations. Please enjoy Chapter 2.
Hello.
Hey, Daryl. This is Alex calling.
Hey, Alex.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Cool. Is now still a good time to chat?
Yeah, no, it's fine, yeah.
Cool. Thank you very much. Just to reflect on the interview process, so we met, I looked at my email, checked again. We met on October 11th, a few months ago, and we interviewed at a library in Burnaby.
Yeah, we could sit here, because that door is quite silent.
And I remember, like, I hadn't done really a pre-interview with you. I think I called you and was just like, oh, I want to do a piece on your organization, Paranormal Investigations, and something that I would feature on Halloween on the radio station I work at. And I know going into it, I didn't know what the story was that I wanted.
Is this just something like your, is this your career or something that's aimed to drive, go somewhere else or to, like to just get farther into the news field or something like that in the long run or?
I studied journalism at UBC and I'm interested in nonfiction storytelling, so. And I'm wondering, what did you understand about my motivations when I was going into this interview, like, what I wanted from you?
Well, originally, I mean, I've been through a lot of various interviews in my past. So in the 10 years, I mean, there's been very little thrown my way that can surprise me.
Right, yeah. And I mean, like, it's around Halloween time and you run an organization called Northern Paranormal Investigations and, like, you do a special event with the Vancouver Police Museum. And,
yeah.
Like, people interview you, especially around Halloween.
Lots.
Yeah. So, okay, that makes sense.
I mean, it could have been just a, you know, I mean, I figure a lot of times it's just people that want to have something fun to play for people on Halloween, you know, you learn a little bit and maybe get some information that would be kind of fun for people to listen to going, oh, that's cool. That kind of stuff. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I didn't really know exactly what I wanted to get going into the interview. And so, like, looking back on it, I know we sort of changed locations a couple times. We sat outside, then we moved into the library.
You could sit on those couches, probably.
And I asked you quite a few questions, which varied a bit in topic, again, because I was searching sort of for the story.
Do you mind if I ask a little bit more about yourself? Like, could you tell me where you grew up?
Ontario.
So I asked you a variety of questions. Some were kind of deeper questions.
In what way does your understanding of there being a paranormal realm give meaning to your life? The candlelight, that was in a dream you said you had.
Some personal questions.
Do you think the existence of spirits means that there's a God? Are you ever scared? What was the alternative? I'm wondering what went through your mind when you were thinking, like, okay, I'm going to get into this. What was going through your mind?
And then I also asked more, like, straightforward and surface-level questions.
What do you think about Halloween? Have any clients you've worked with ever then joined?
I just want to get our listeners to be able to visualize it. Like, what does it look like?
Or try field this. Try field.
Do you see? If you see something paranormal.
Okay. Not all of my guys have seen something paranormal. Some people have said they've seen.
So normally with nonfiction storytelling, you know what the story is, and then you go to your subject and kind of get the tape you need. So, like, you get the audio recordings that you need to structure your story in such a way that it's engaging, often in a narrative structure. And basically, like, what I started hearing in the interview was that I found it really interesting that you had been someone who struggled with substance abuse, and then you had sort of delved into the world of paranormal investigation, and that seemed like a transfer of energy to me. And then, of course, you brought up the Ouija board as being a first step into that.
Yes, I used a Ouija board. There was a lot of circumstances involved in it, but there were strange things that happened with that board that I can't explain.
What happened? Can you tell me?
And I really fixated on that. And I kept asking and asking.
I'm just wondering why you started using it, like, when you were going through hard times. Like, why were you like, oh, I'm going to just ask some questions to this Ouija board? Or how were you, could you describe how you were using it? You were just looking for answers, you think? Did you have a fear of the Ouija board back when you were first using it? And you didn't play as a kid or anything? You only got into it as an adult?
And, yeah, I felt like as soon as I left the interview, I felt like, oh, wow, I had been really, really pushy. And that wasn't a very sound interview I did. And I was just wondering, when you left the interview, like, were you also thinking about that?
Well, I'm not going to beat around the bush with you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the thought ran across my head. I mean, there reached a point in time where I do believe, and you'll remember I said, this is the last thing I'll say about it.
I don't give it any power anymore, right? I gave it power years ago. I don't intend to give it anymore again. So as far as I'm concerned, that conversation is done. Hate to say it. Right? It's just me personally.
At that point, you stopped.
Yeah.
And I'll honestly say it was a good thing you did.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't have gone farther.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the people I've interviewed or that have interviewed me, they know what they want to do.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I mean, I know what usually what I'm going to answer them. I mean, it's they, you know, throw a unique question my way that I have to leave and go, oh, okay, that was unexpected, but interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But most people have a set. I mean, the odd time they haven't, and yes, they grab something that they know, you know, is going to be probably interesting to the people that are listening to it.
Right.
So, I mean, it's happened before, and it will happen again.
I mean, one part, like when I was listening back to the tape, one part that really struck me was when I asked if the Ouija, like using a Ouija board had been part of the reason you went into recovery. And you said, No.
That happened the day I was standing up on a SkyTrain platform deciding whether to technically end it or not. And I made a phone call to my dad, and my dad happened to be there across the road when I made the second phone call, and he took me to a recovery house. It had nothing to do with that. So, no. No. So, that was completely substance abuse that prompted that. So, no. That had nothing to do with that.
I just wanted our listeners to have a visual. You've already described a Ouija board, but, like, and I know it was sort of, you said, it's like, whatever, you would just use it, but...
And then right after, like, I ask you another question about the Ouija board.
Sorry to giggle in the background there. yeah, you did. And I mean, again, it's my life. I'm not embarrassed about what I did in my past. My past is my past. It's what makes me me.
No, but...
I mean, and did it throw me off? Well, I mean, I probably inside, I probably went, okay, and answered the question. I mean, frankly, you know, as I said before, you know, no. I mean, there's catalysts and stuff like that, but there's so many variances and what led me to make my decisions for what I did. And honestly, you know, the point that you had asked about, you know, that situation I was in at that time, standing up in the SkyTrain tasting, mm-hmm. deciding to do whatever, you know, that is something that included many, 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 many aspects of my life and not just one. So it really didn't throw me off. And mm-hmm. the fact that you went on, again, you reached a point where I said, okay, that's the last thing I'm going to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you stopped, because I think you knew that, okay, I've gone as far as I can go. And as a reporter, you kind of said, I pushed it to the limit.
Yeah.
That's it. He's not willing to go any farther. Okay, we're done. And that's fine. I mean, you respected that, but you did exactly what I expected everybody to do. And they strive to get the information they require. If you didn't mm-hmm. do that, you wouldn't be a reporter.
Yeah. I think, like, for example, when I had asked you about when you considered committing suicide, like, and then you gave an answer and I went right back to the Ouija board. I wish that I had been listening more actively and like asked you more about that and like just asked you about what you were talking about.
Yeah, I mean, by saying that, and I guess that's true. I mean, most people that are interviewing, they have a set goal or at least they come up with a set goal very quickly. I mean, I have to agree with you. Not all reporters truly, really listen until they get back to the recording and can sit down and hear it.
Yeah, totally.
That's when it comes out. And they're like, okay, I didn't quite see that. and then they're like, wow, I wish I had done this or I wish I had done that. You know, what do they say? Hind vision is 20/20. So, I mean, it's, you know, but most interviews, at least, that I've experienced happen super, super quick. I mean, 2 hours is a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, usually 5-10 minutes, maybe 15 max. You're mm-hmm. in, you're out, you're out the door. You don't really have time. But if people took a little bit of time to listen, then they might actually get something better than what they were expecting.
Yeah, most people are on a deadline, right? So they
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I know that.
Yeah, of course. So, like, thinking about, I guess, what we just talked about the process and stuff, I don't know, like, do you think the first chapter, like, the story I cut together is true? Like, do you think it represents you and what you do accurately?
I would say the first part that you did in a short format, the way you did it, was done well. It represented a little bit about me that other people may not necessarily see or hear. And you know, if I don't, I really didn't hear anything that would say that no, this wasn't true to me.
Right.
I mean, it did represent not all of it, but a very broad range of it condensed down into a certain period.
That's fair, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me.
Not a problem. I mean, you know, I appreciate you coming over and interviewing me and stuff like that. And if there's anything else I can tell you, you know, just ask away.
Okay, great. Well, I guess, yeah, thanks so much for everything.
All right, you're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, have a nice day.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Get the Tape on 24 Hours of Radio Art. My name is Alex DeBoer, and I'm broadcasting live from CITR 101.9 FM. This piece was created by me, featuring Daryl Pearson, music by Blue Dot Sessions. Thank you for listening. And stay tuned in to CITR for more wild and weird radio art.